Blog Talk Radio.
Second time, the savior of the world from fascism, totalitarianism, and of course, it. Some people think that it brought the United States out of the Depression. So we're going to start with the events today. We hear a lot about the Mayan calendar and the end of the world in 2012. Well, the earliest known Mayan inscription was in 36 BC. In 43 BC, after the assassination of Julius Caesar, Big Julius, Cicero, who was one of his critics of his, quote, dictatorship, had suffered his head and his hand chopped off by Mark Antony's soldiers. Of course, Mark Antony later met his fate because of his relationship with Cleopatra. In 1741, after Peter the Great, the first great Romanov emperor, his wife, or his paramour, Elizabeth, who was Lithuanian, Elizabeth Petrova became the first female Tsarina, or Russian empress. And, of course, the second one was the greatest of one of the greatest rulers of Russia, Catherine, who was German, who was a Lutheran, and converted to Russian Orthodoxy. In 1787, Delaware became the first state to ratify the U.S. Constitution. Now, this is interesting. 1808, James Madison, who succeeded Thomas Jefferson, he became president, Madison did, and George Clinton, for the second time, was the vice president. Interesting. It's the only time this happened in American history. Martin Van Buren, 1836, the little guy from New York, became president. And 1842, the great New York Philharmonic, America's first Philharmonic Symphony Orchestra, they played their first concert. It's also known as a conductor killer. The musicians in that orchestra don't like the conductor. They'll do all kinds of things, reportedly, to sabotage his performance. In 1877, Thomas Jefferson demonstrated the gramophone. We have a recording in the archives, but I couldn't find it. And the first demonstration was Mary Had a Little Lamb. In 1926, the first gas refrigerator was patented, and those of you remember your, may remember your grandmother's Servel. There was a cylinder device on the top of the refrigerator, and the gas later gave way to electric refrigerators. Back to Pearl Harbor, during that battle, the USS Ward, a destroyer which escaped destruction, sank the first Japanese submarine. They recently located it. Fushida, the guy who led the, he was the commander of the air, the Zeros that zoomed in on the fleet. He later left Buddhism and converted to Christianity. We have a connection here in San Francisco, which I will put up next week, Red's Java House. That's where, whenever we have Fleet Week, that's when the sailors stop there for a beer and used to have the best $1.50 hamburgers and sandwiches. Red, who was a young sailor who lied to get into the U.S. Navy, survived the sinking of the USS Arizona. There used to be a photo of that ship with him on it, but somebody stole it. It's quite a landmark, and it's one of the famous sites in San Francisco, which we'll have on our other website at Amicus Veritas YouTube, AmiCusVeritas. In 1949, after being defeated by Mao Tse-sung's forces on the Chinese mainland, Chiang Kai-shek of the Nationalists fled to Formosa. They led, the native Formosans were outraged that the mainland Chinese Nationalists had taken over and changed the name of Formosa to Taiwan. Taiwan is still today a big manufacturing center of electronics and electronics and other devices that they export to the United States. In 1965, Pope Paul VI and the Orthodox Patriarch Athenagoras decided that they would scuttle their mutual excommunication. In 1054, the Eastern Church split from the from Rome. The Eastern Church was in Istanbul. Was in Constantinople, which is today Istanbul, and they decided to try to unify. There's been these discussions between the Greek Orthodox. There's also a Russian Orthodox Church. Between there's discussions between the and meetings between the Rome and the Greek Orthodox Church. Among the birthdays, births today. Excuse me. 1542, Mary, Queen of Scots, was born. She had a terrible life. She was married to or betrothed to the French Dauphin. That's the, like, Prince of Wales, comparable in the French royal house. She later made all kinds of mistakes when she returned to Scotland. And, of course, John Calvin, who was a religious bigot, railed against her. There were plots against her. She didn't use her head. She was forced into a marriage with Robert Darnley, who was bisexual or gay. She did have a son who became James I and succeeded Elizabeth. Elizabeth plotted. She feared Mary, Queen of Scots' claim to the English throne. Mary was Catholic. So she imprisoned Mary in a castle for nearly two decades and later ordered her execution. She claimed she didn't know anything about it, of course. And in 1761, the famous Trousseau, Madame Trousseau, a.k.a. Marie Grosholtz, was born. And, of course, we hear the Tussaud Wax Museum of Famous People. One of the great Italian composers, Pietro Mascagni, was born. And his one of his most popular operas, Cavalleria Rusticana, and Pagliacci the Clown. Willa Cather is born, and she is thought to be the first of the lesbian authors. I think she lived out west. Rudolf Frimmel, who wrote a lot of operettas, he was about the 1890s. He was born on this day. the first president of the American Newspaper Guild, Matthew Hayward Campbell Brown, born. Another Canadian who came from Calgary, Alberta, Rod Cameron, born in 1910, went to Hollywood, like people like Glenn Ford, Lorne Greene, a lot of Canadians. Mary, what's her name, came from Toronto. Oh, how can I put it? America's sweetheart. She was actually born in Toronto. Walter Houston, the father of John Houston, was born in Toronto, Canada. We have quite a contribution from our neighbors to the north. Louis Prima, the great band leader, who was born today, and Eli Wallach, great director, actor, who had this unique voice, played in a lot of, I think, several westerns and kind of a shady character. Helen Gurley Brown, who founded Cosmo magazine. Noam Chomsky, a controversial leftist. The first woman governor of Kentucky, Martha Wayne Collins, her birthday. And if you like baseball, Larry Bird's born today. One of the greatest French military performers in the field, Marshal Ney. He would lead these suicidal cavalry charges for Napoleon. After Napoleon was finally defeated at Waterloo, Marshal Ney was either surrendered or he was picked up by the restored French monarchy and was ordered executed at age 46. And then on this day, Captain Bligh died in Britain. And I think we ought to play this little clip where Charles Laughton, the unforgettable Captain Bligh, in all these movies played Captain Bligh. And he survived. He was thrown overboard, not thrown overboard, he was put in a rowboat, and they were hoping that he would die. And he survived in this rowboat with supplies, and he got to Bermuda, was given another ship to hunt down the mutineers. And I thought we had Mutiny on the Bounty here, and I'm trying to find it here. Anyway, it's a great little clip, if we can find it. I've got so many clips that I may have to purge some of this stuff. Anyway, he was born on this day. No, he died on this day, excuse me. And, of course, we had Thomas Nast, the great cartoonist who exposed the Tammany Hall and brought about the downfall of the guy who ran Tammany Hall. And we don't have these type of cartoonists who expose political corruption today, unfortunately. The guy who built the Suez Canal and attempted to build the Panama Canal, Ferdinand de Slips, died on this day. Probably the greatest of the Wagnerian sopranos. She was from Norway, and she didn't live as long as a lot of these great singers who sing opera today. Kirsten Flagstad died on this day of cancer. She died in her early 60s. She was lambasted. She made a blazing career at the Metropolitan Opera during the mid-30s, and she sang all over, made some great recordings. And at the beginning of the war in Europe, because she was Norwegian and her husband was stuck in Norway, she decided to go back to Norway to be with him. She was lambasted in the American press, and they tried to bar her from singing in this country. George Christopher, the mayor of San Francisco, helped save her career and got her invited back to San Francisco. She had sung here before World War II, and he saved the San Francisco opera singer. He was probably San Francisco's greatest modern mayor because he was ethical, he was honest, he was competent, and he was not only a brilliant businessman, he brought the New York Giants here, which became the San Francisco Giants, and twice recently, world baseball champs. He also saved diplomatic relations between the United States and Russia because of Khrushchev, when he paid a state visit here at the invitation of President Eisenhower. Khrushchev was insulted all over the country by refugees from Soviet tyranny. And Eisenhower asked Mayor Christopher to invite Khrushchev to San Francisco. Khrushchev wanted to see Disneyland, and I think it was Mayor Sam Yorty barred that, as well as people down in Southern California. So I did extensive interviews with George Christopher, who I knew for many years, and this is one of the many interviews that he did for me. And we're going to play how he saved diplomatic relations between the United States and Russia in 1959. You won't see San Francisco mayors doing these things today. So here it is.
The figure of international renown and stature than his 1959 encounter with the ruler of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev. To George Christopher, in a moment of crisis, at the direct request of the President of the United States, fell the challenging diplomatic assignment of preventing an open breach between Khrushchev and the U.S. The mayor of San Francisco was equal to the test.
Under this gavel, the voice of our people has been heard. The opinion of the majority has been sanctioned. The hopes of our forebears are being fulfilled. Its deep and significant meaning has caused America to grow and prosper. I present this symbol of our democracy to our eminent guest as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, not only of his visit to San Francisco, but as a reminder also of the solidarity of the American people in their determination to uphold these revered precepts of our constitutional government. The energy, Mr. Premier, that is required to wield this gavel as a decision is reached is as potent, if you please, is as potent as the energy contained in any nuclear explosive. The drop of our gavel affirms a constitutional decision, a decision of and by and for the people of America. As I present this gavel to Premier Khrushchev, may I, with your permission, ladies and gentlemen, recall the words of the patron saint of San Francisco, Saint Francis of Assisi. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. Mr. Premier, once again, welcome.
So impressed was the ruler of all the Russias that George Christopher was invited by the premier in the Kremlin to visit the Soviet Union. 8 hours alone with Khrushchev and his top lieutenants, arguing the cause of freedom, free enterprise, capitalism, self-initiative, probing the strengths and weaknesses of communism, building a fervent conviction that our nation must fully utilize all the strength of its freedom to keep ahead of the communist challenge.
Now, George Christopher, before he died, gave me a film to use as I saw fit. And this is one of the excerpts from a film done on his service, twice elected as mayor of San Francisco. And nobody has surpassed the number of the plurality at elections since. He was overwhelmingly elected mayor of San Francisco twice. So none of the people since then have, and we'll get into why some of them were some of the worst people that had sat in the mayor's office here in San Francisco. We hear a lot about John Philip Sousa, who's known as America's March King, but there was another great March King, Richard Franco Goldman, and he wrote a famous march called On the Mall, and I think it's appropriate, and it's also appropriate to follow George, Christopher, and Khrushchev. Appropriate for George, Christopher, and Nikita Khrushchev. Now, here's that little clip where Charles Lawton, the unforgettable Captain Bligh, he set adrift after the mutiny on the Bounty, and this is a classic.
Murdering butcher. I've had enough of this bloodshed. He's the master of life and death on a quarter deck above the angels. McCoy! Quill! I'm sick of blood. Bloody backs, bloody faces. Why are you doing your last command on this ship? We'll be men again and we're hanged for it.
Casting me adrift, 3,500 miles from a port of call. You're sending me to my doom, eh? Well, you're wrong, Christian. I'll take this boat as she floats to England if I must. I'll live to see you, all of you, hanging from the highest yard arm in the British fleet.
Well, that was a little clip from the original Mutiny on the Bounty. Now, this is amazing. The survivors of the Mutiny on the Bounty found this so desolate place. They burned the Bounty so that nobody could decide to leave, and the British Navy would hunt them down, and they would hang from the highest yardarm, the sails, mutineers. Horrible things the British Navy did. Anyway, they found an uninhabited island called Pitcairn's Island, and the unique thing was it was off, was mischarted. It was way off the map. In the British, that were used by the British Navy. So that's how these people who survived Fletcher Christians and the remainder of the mutineers, they are now, I think, under the it's part of New Zealand's administration, and they're an unusual group of people, and I guess there's been a lot of intermarriage, and you know what happens there. Anyway, it's going to be other interesting things. The U.S. Supreme Court has decided to put on a docket to hear the challenge by the pro-gay, lesbian, NAMBLA constituency to permit gay marriage. Now, Washington State has approved it, and there's a lot of controversy on this. Over half the country, according to the polls, and you got to be very careful about reading them, opposes gay marriage. They support civil unions. And, of course, the gays have made a big mistake. They're politicians when they should be dealing with economic issues, because they're relevant economic issues when two people, whether they're the same gender or opposite genders, are living together and share expenses. They should have the same economic protections, taxes, inheritance, all that, as married people. I mean, that's only fair. And that's what we think that these activists should be doing. Anyway, one of the problems is that one of the clerks in the U.S. Supreme Court has publicly stated that the court has been affected, or hinted that the court's been affected by gay, lesbian clerks and staff attorneys who apparently are pushing their own agenda. And it's already happened here in San Francisco at the California State Supreme Court and appellate courts, and it affected the Steve Nery case. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this goes. But wherever there's been gay marriage, the societies that permitted this, whether it was Rome, the Greeks, it was a sect in Egypt at the turn of the century, it's been a disaster for the society. So we shall see what we shall see. I also recommend, for if you want to get some Christmas books, get Jack Cashel's, several of his books, What's the Matter with California? I jokingly said you should have included a chapter, What's the Matter with San Francisco? But his one of his best books, one of his best two books are Deconstructing Obama. And the other one is, if you want to understand the Roman Catholic Church's finances, get his book, Popes and Bankers. It's a paperback. It's a great book, and he's an author who has been, and in fact, censored. They refuse to review his books, even, you know, to trash them, but at least it's a review. In the Chronicle, I don't see it in the L.A. Times, the New York Times, Washington Post, yet this guy is very literate. He has several degrees. So I highly recommend you get this book, these books for Christmas, instead of the usual trash that they offer. So we're going to end. We'll be back Monday. We'll have more on George Christopher's life, the greatest modern mayor of San Francisco. And we will end with our usual, which is so appropriate, politics and poker.
Hey, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fine, fine.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
you'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the sound?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing. Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one, I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and polka, politics and polka, shuffle up and carve and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Well, that's a good question. Anyway, we'll be back Monday with some more of George Christopher and updates on what's going on with this public nudity, which is very interesting because it turns out there were other societies, even in modern times, that turned a blind eye to this, let me put it that way. So go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas. Peter Paul Brazola, good night. Have a good, safe weekend.